Yes.
Well, you're not interested in the appropriate regulations for the National Protection.
That's the third question, I'm sure.
That'd be what your news desk would want you to go on.
Yes. Kate Bierman from Alton Taylor. Dan, you mentioned inequality throughout your speech. What measures do you think the next government specifically could take to reduce inequality further?
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, Ian Watson from BBC. I was at the Progress Conference last year when you ruled out standing for Labour leadership. I was wondering if you were reconsidering. And secondly, the substance of what you were saying, you said it's a false choice between defending and denouncing the last Labour government. It's a choice which the current leader seems to have taken. He's gone for the latter approach. Why is he wrong?
Okay. Yeah, I think I'll come to your question first, Kate. I think inequality is the thing that draws us into the Labour movement. We've had a lot of people join the Labour Party recently. I think that's a very good thing, and it focuses all of our minds on what was the one thing that made us join the party. I joined when I was at university, and there was a specific moment which I remember very clearly, which was the very sad death of John Smith. And I think that moment kind of forced me to think about what I considered to be important in life, what my own values were. And my own values were the values of the Labour Party. I think there's never going to be any kind of sort of quick fit solution. There's no silver bullet solutions to resolving the issues of inequality in our local communities and around the country. But that in itself is not a reason for inaction. I think some of the things that I've spoken about today in terms of the kind of sort of the longer term investment in R&D, investment in infrastructure, the importance of education. I'm someone who's absolutely seized by the value of early years intervention, the importance of the first 1,000 days. By the time a child reaches two and a half, their life opportunities are largely determined. So although it doesn't sit within the kind of natural culture of political decision making to invest money over the longer term, I absolutely think that that should be a priority for any future Labour government. The way that I describe this is that in my Barnsley central constituency, there is a ward which is called Kingston. And I want the daughter of a cleaner in Kingston to have the same life opportunities as the son of a barrister in Kingston upon Thames. That is what draws us into the Labour Party, that fight to make the country a fairer place, to level the playing field. These are kind of generational struggles, but I think it's something that the Labour Party has always had at its heart and something that when we do get back into power needs to be front and centre of our agenda. Paul, you didn't want to ask me about infrastructure spend. Maybe we can chat about that later. The metric by which all of us are judged in politics is votes in the ballot box. And we've got very important elections taking place in May. Elections around the country, up in Scotland, of course in Wales, throughout England and here in London. It's a major test for all of us. And all of us who believe in the Labour Party, all of us who understand the benefit of having Labour representation, have to be out there making that case. And that is why every day between now and May, myself and all of my colleagues will be on the campaign trail, fighting the good fight and making sure that our Labour councillors and that our Labour mayoral candidates, and of course in Wales and Scotland, where we're obviously hoping that Carwyn Jones remains as the First Minister, and we're hoping obviously that there will be some progress that we can cheer in Scotland. All of us have a responsibility to be out there making that case for why people should support Labour. And I'll certainly be doing that with my usual vigour over the coming weeks and months. You asked me about the leadership ballot. Look, anyone who kind of sort of knows me knows that I don't sort of spend a huge amount of time getting into the kind of sort of process and detail of the kind of the mechanics of the Labour Party. I mean, I'll just say one thing which kind of sort of links into your point. We face two profound challenges over the next few months. These important elections that I've just spoken about, but also an EU referendum that is taking place in June. You know, I'm someone who has lived all of my life doing what I think is the right thing for our country. And nobody should be anything other than completely clear that this EU referendum is the most profoundly important decision that we've had, certainly in my lifetime, and it will shape the future of my constituents and our whole country for the foreseeable future. So I think the public will frankly have very little sympathy with those people within the Labour Party who are focused on anything other than trying to secure a Labour win in May and a referendum win in June. I can absolutely tell you that is what 100% of my focus will be on over that period. Right. Anishka.
Anish Kostana from The Guardian. You said that workers want a party that can beat government rather than oppose government, which seemed to be aimed at the current leadership. I'm just wondering where you think it is lacking in electability terms. And just, sorry, follow up on the BBC question. Obviously, you don't want to talk about leadership right now. Would it be your eventual ambition to lead the Labour Party?
Okay.
Simple question, Dan. Do you want to be Prime Minister?
Thank you. Nice. Yes.
James Noble from Connect. If Labour were in government now, how would your budget next week differ from the budget that George Osborne is going to be delivering?
Okay. All right. Let me come to the question about the budget first. I think that the most important thing is what I said in the speech, that it needs to be a budget that is in the national interest, and not in the interest, the short-term political interest of the person who's giving it. I was very clear to kind of root everything that I've said in my own community, in my own constituency. And I know this is not criticism of anyone here, but we tend sometimes to kind of sort of live in this Westminster bubble. But in the end, all of us who serve in politics do so to represent our constituents. And what they expect us to do is take difficult decisions that are in the national interest. That's what politics should be about. And the fact that there is such scepticism about the way that we do our politics in this country, I think demonstrates that far too many people do not have that kind of sort of faith in us as individuals or in us as a political establishment to behave in that way. So I think the most important thing is a budget that is in the national interest and not in the short-term interest of the Chancellor. Torkel, Anishka, you both kind of sort of asked me about the current state of the Labour Party. Look, the remarks that I've made today are in no way seeking to be a critique of anybody in the Labour Party. I actually think it's a good thing that our leader, Jeremy Corbyn, wants to have an open debate about the future of our party and the future of our country. I think that's a good thing. I think it's an entirely positive thing. I don't think that we did enough of it in the previous Parliament. I don't think we did that work to think long and hard about what the purpose of the Labour Party is there. What is our defining mission? What are our values? What are our priorities? And I think it is absolutely right and proper that we seek to have that debate and we seek to have it in a reasonable, constructive way. And frankly, anyone who knows me, knows anything about the way that I do my politics, understands that any contribution that I've made today and will seek to make over the coming weeks and months is always designed to be constructive. I'm incredibly proud to be a Labour MP. We know that there are lots of very, very talented people in the Labour Party who are seeking to make a contribution to the party in different ways. I'm now on the back benches, and that gives me the freedom, the space to make, I hope, some constructive contributions to an important debate about the future of our party and the future of our country. And that is all I'm seeking to do. Torkel, you asked me sort of quite a big question. Look, I'm very comfortable with the decision that I took in May of last year. My absolute focus is, as I've said, getting out the vote in May, working to support the party, working to support Alan Johnson to make sure that Britain remains within a reformed European Union in June. Right. Yes, thank you.
Focused on worker rights and trade unions, it seems a sharp
tilt to the soft left from the position last year. Obviously, Labour has shifted leftwards under Jeremy Corbyn. So my question is, what would you say to critics who are likely to accuse you of swaying with the wind, Labour holding your personal politics to appeal to Corbyn supporters?
OK, thank you.
David Williamson, Western Mail. Labour have been in power in Wales since 1999. If in May they actually lose their position, do you think the UK party is going to have to ask about the messages that are being sent from Westminster into places where they have the traditional heartlands?
Okay, thank you. Right, Kate, let me come to your question. I think Rachel Reeves gave a brilliant speech on Monday to the Social Mobility Foundation. I think she's got a huge amount to contribute. But I think there's a lot of people across the Parliamentary Labour Party and across the whole movement who've got a lot to contribute. I think it's important that we don't seek to turn these contributions into an attack or a critique of our current leadership. I can't speak for Rachel, I can only speak for myself. Today is a long-planned event to bring together a number of the kind of sort of thoughts and views that I've formulated over 5 years in Parliament. Jeremy has been very, very clear about the fact that he wants to have this big, wide, open debate about policy, about our party, our government. I say, let's have that debate. You know, let's embrace that opportunity and let's work out precisely what our direction of travel should be. We've lost two general elections very badly. I don't want to lose a third one. And that means that we've got to do the work, we've got to use the time and the space that opposition provides us. And I think people like Rachel and lots of other people, including a number from Yorkshire, have got a big constructive contribution to make to that process, and that's what we'll be seeking to do. Lucy, this is about what I think is important and what I believe in. I wasn't a member of a trade union before I came into Parliament because of the nature of the job that I had. But I've worked closely with a number of trade unions, Unison and Unite and many others, including Community and a number of others. And what I've seen is the value that they offer in the workplace. Now, membership of trade unions is declining, and I think it's very important for all of us who believe in the value that the trade union movement can offer to speak up for that. And I spoke about Northern College. Northern College is a wonderful place just on the edge of my constituency, heavily supported by the trade unions, which invests in people. It gives people a second chance. It gives people the opportunity to retrain, to learn new skills and to prepare themselves for other jobs that they might go on to do in the future. I think the changing nature of the workplace will mean increasingly there is more and more of a role for that in the future. And given the, as I said, the undemocratic reforms that this government is seeking to impose on trade unions, those of us who believe that they have an important role to play have a duty and a responsibility to speak up for them. And that's what I'm seeking to do. It's a question about Wales. I think we face a stiff test in Wales. I think Carwyn Jones is incredibly impressive. I know that UKIP have made quite significant progress in South Wales. I think it is very important that as a party we do not focus all of our attention and all of our fire on the Tories. You know, for those of us in the north and certainly for people across South Wales, UKIP represent a very significant challenge to us. Following on from the general election, I wrote a report specifically looking at how we could regain the faith and trust of millions of Labour voters who drifted away from us over many years, including in our heartlands throughout Yorkshire and in South Wales as well. So like Scotland, like Wales, here in London and across England, May does represent a very important test for us. I think it's an opportunity for us to demonstrate our values and the good work that the Labour authorities are doing around the country. That is on the ballot paper. That is being put to the test. You know, we are at a point in the electoral cycle where we should be seeking to do very well. You know, I hope that we will not just be picking up Labour council seats, that we will be taking councils taking councils that are currently controlled by political parties. At this point in the cycle, and looking back on the historical record over many years, That is what we should be seeking to achieve. So that is the test, and all of us have a responsibility to work towards achieving that test. Right.
You've got about 5 minutes.
Okay. All right, I'll take another round of three. Yes.
Yeah, Chris Wilford, Arts Institute of Architects, is the Global Point of Climate Dispute Resolution. We are living in a globalised world, so to meet our future infrastructure needs, do you think government should continue to be open to working with international partners?
Okay.
Chris Hope, Telegraph. Just two quick questions. You said there that you need to become more boldly on Europe, but no one has on Labour. Isn't the problem being that David Cameron, doing all the talking on Europe, is putting off your supporters from doing anything about Europe? And the silence could actually damage the case for Remain. And just quickly, secondly, do you think Michael Gove should resign as a member of the Privy Council or as Justice Secretary if he's found to have been the source of the story in the Sun yesterday?
Okay.
Yes, Marcus. Marcus Roberts, YouGov. With polling showing a dramatic difference between the views of Labour Party members on issues like immigration, public spending and defence, and Labour voters on those issues, who do you think Labour MPs should listen to when it comes to making policy?
Okay. Let me come to that one straight away. I think Labour MPs need to listen to their local party members, but of course they need to listen to their constituents as well. As a Labour MP, I'm not a delegate from my own local party. I've been elected to Parliament by my constituents to stand up for them and make sure that their voice is heard in Parliament. In the end, though, I don't think we should ever lose sight that the public get to decide. And I think that we need to make sure that we, having lost two general elections, that our policies are rooted in the things that people care about. I said that in an article I wrote for the Yorkshire Post just recently. I've said it again today. I think there are three things that people really care about, and that is their family, their work and their community, the place that they live. And for us as Labour Party politicians, those are the things that we need to be talking about. We need to demonstrate that we've got the credibility to have a positive effect in those areas and others. So yes, we must listen to a range of different voices. Yes, it's incredibly important that we have that internal debate within our own party, but we should never lose sight of the fact that what we need is a Labour government, and in the end, it will be the public, the people of this country, who get to decide whether that's what we have or not. Good question about globalisation. I think the challenge for us as a country is to compete in that globalised market. Workers in my part of the world are not competing necessarily just with workers in other parts of this country, but around the world. And, you know, I want to see Britain as an outward-looking trading nation. And that is why one of the great concerns that I have about the real risks that come from leaving the European Union. The only certainty of a Brexit is uncertainty. Look at what the CBI are saying in terms of the 3 million jobs that are linked to our membership of the European Union. So in a globalised, networked world, I don't think it is an option for Britain to pull up the drawbridge. There isn't a drawbridge to pull up. And I believe that we, as a party, have long-standing internationalist traditions, and we should be outward-focused and outward-looking. And I think, in the end, that's what the public expect us to do. Chris, you asked about Europe. I mean, I think Alan Johnson, as I said, is doing a brilliant job of articulating the Labour case. I think that does come with some challenges. There's no doubt that my constituency, is much better off as a result of our membership of the European Union. But not everybody sees it in that way. And quite often on the doorstep, people will raise with me concerns about immigration, and of course they will link those to our membership of the European Union. So I think over the final few months, the challenge for us, for all of us, for Jeremy, for all of the PLP, for everyone who believes in making a positive case for the European Union, is to get out there, make that case, but make it in a way that relates to the challenges that people experience in their everyday lives. And I'm confident that if we get that right, that we do it in the right way and we can achieve the right result. I'm not particularly up to speed with the Michael Gove story, but I think most people, not least the public, would take a very dim view if such a senior cabinet figure was found to behaving in that way. That is something that I think people would take a very, very dim view of. Right, I'm going to hand back to you.
Dan, thank you very, very much. I'm sorry time has beaten us and we have to close. Thank you for a very thoughtful speech. Although as a resident of Barnes, I did think you were rather fingering me for inequality. thank you to the ingenious members of the press who have demonstrated a brilliant ability to ask essentially the same question in 9 different ways. Can I ask of you just that in your padding out your copy, you do include the words hosted at Demos in the 500 words you file on the National Infrastructure Commission in a few hours' time. It occurs to me that when every single job in the country is automated, the only human beings left will be the parliamentary sketch writers. So thank you to you all for coming, and we look forward to seeing you again. I can definitely say that I'm not going to be a candidate to be leader of the Labour Party. And this dispute, this argument will go on the Daily Politics, which I commend to you, 12 o'clock today. The guests of the day are very distinguished columnists from the Times. Ladies and gentlemen, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for coming. And Dan, thank you for your thoughts. Please join me in thanking Dan Jarvis.